bigger fish to fry than you. Bigger fish to fry than you. It's high time you listen to me. I choose my battles carefully. So get out of here, son. Let me show you the door. You'll be in trouble then. By the time I count to four, one, two, three, four. Bang! You've been messing with my mind. To waste my time, it's most unkind. I got better things to do than to play these pointless games with you. You are put away your big guns. You're acting out of fear, but I'm not scared of you. So on your way out, watch your rear. One, two, three, four.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstud Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. Today I am joined by Mr. Sean Cranberry, the comic curator of Sophia Books.
Thank you very much.
Down on Hastings Street. And we're going to be interviewing James Jean. I'm going to bring him on the line. Have we got you here, James?
Yes, right here.
Excellent. Thank you for coming and joining us this week. You're coming to town on Sunday for the Vancouver Comic Convention Comics and Store.
Yes.
Excuse me. Blech. I got a little of a clump there in my throat. So we're going to talk about some of your work, including the much gorgeous Process Recess and all sorts of other stuff. So I guess we'll start out with where does James Jeans come from and some of the work that people would know you for and what kind of training you got, what kind of influences? I guess that's a loaded question.
I came from Taiwan. You know, from my mother's womb, I guess you could say, in 1979. And we moved to New Jersey when I was 3 years old and raised in the heart of suburbia. And, you know, raised on comics. I think Wolverine 37 was the first comic I ever saw. It was just full of raw violence and sexual energy. You know, it was an amazing experience for, what, like an 11-year-old kid. I guess a revelation, you could say. And then fell in love with drawing. And then I went to art school in New York, at the School of Visual Arts. And I lived in New York for, I guess, 5 years. Spent most of my time in Brooklyn. And then I got married and moved to L.A., and while all that stuff was happening, I guess, you know, towards the end of the internet boom, or the bubble, I should say. And
right.
I visited the offices of DC Comics, and they saw my website, and they gave me my first gig, or first real ongoing gig, which was the covers to Fables. And in the meantime, I was also pursuing editorial illustration, magazine, book covers, that sort of thing. And comic covers really helped get that rolling at the same time. So I would say about a quarter of the work I do is comics, and the other three quarters are magazine, advertising, institutional, entertainment kind of work. And now I reside in L.A., and I try my best to paint when I can, but I got to pay the bills, so now I'm doing, I guess, a little more commercial illustration than I'd like to, but it seems to have gotten me a bit of a following, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have a lot of friends in town that are huge fans of your work.
Oh, great.
So comics, it's a passion for you to continue with comics while you also have the more commercial work on the side?
Or well, you know what? I approach comic covers as illustration assignments rather than, you know, going crazy drawing Batgirl, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. You know, each cover presents its own set of problems, and I try and solve it in a unique and interesting way. You know, just like I would try and solve a magazine assignment or anything else. And being a fan of comics, I guess, is a separate thing. You know, I try and keep up with you know, Chris Ware, Daniel Klaus,
right.
and a lot of the Southland kids or people like Jordan Crane and
mm-hmm.
Sammy Harkin and all those people. So yeah, I would say that's a separate thing. You know, my comic covers illustration, that requires a different part of my brain is activated while doing that thing,
right.
kind of endeavor. And then reading comics, you know, that's for fun and pleasure. Not that there's not fun and pleasure in illustrating, but a different kind of thing for me.
Well, I noticed that you're a member of the Meat House. Is it collective?
Yeah, I guess it's more of a collective now. I used to be, we tried publishing anthologies on a regular basis, but...
I think the last one came out about 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right. And
irregular.
We were still desperately trying to get it out. But, it's difficult because most of the members have gone on to do, you know, pursue their own separate careers, not doing so much comics.
Well, it's a pretty impressive group of people.
That's right, and I guess the main criticism people have is that, you know, how come, you know, we can't get our act together and put something together amazing. I think the main problem is the lack of a singular editorial vision or one person to sort of take the reins and cut out the fat and create their own coherent book. I think we're all just a bunch of really nice guys who are afraid to each other. So, and then it's also difficult for someone to get on the phone and start, you know, yelling at someone when, you know, if they're late with something, and also with securing a publisher and all that fun business.
Well, it's a pretty interesting dynamic group of talent. It's a New York base, so were you involved with there at the beginning, like, while you were in New York and just kind of stayed involved after?
It basically started at school, at SVA. Just a bunch of guys who wanted to get together one night, have some pizza and beer, and draw 24-hour comics. Mm-hmm. That was sort of the conceit of the first book, was that it was just going to be 24-hour comics. And then eventually, when people started pitching in money... and getting, you know, a color cover, and then sort of evolved into more ambitious books. So I would say the first issue is kind of all over the place in terms of quality, because some of the comics were actually drawn in 24 hours, drunk and bloated by, you know, Pizza New York's pretty good, but... and then other people labored over their comics over a course of, you know, a few weeks. So then the second issue, you know, we came up with a theme, and then we tried doing it again. But mainly it was just a conduit for for us to, you know, focus our collective interests and for us to just hang out and get together and just do something fun.
Did it help to, like, expand your own creativity, like, to see what other people are doing and other people kind of pushing you to try something different?
Definitely, yeah. And I also realized that certain people are just much more talented in terms of a narrative, sequential art, in terms of just doing comics. For me, comics is so, doing comics is so painful. And yeah. I just like crafting a single image and leaving it at that. I'm sure, I don't know if you've seen those that documentary on Chris Ware, and he's over his drafting table and he's huffing and puffing and looking like he's flagellating himself. But yeah, it is quite painful, and it did expand our own interests, our own taste, I guess. It's interesting to see how people have evolved over the years and what they've gone on to do, and how much people have changed or not changed. I think mostly it is just about, you know, being friends, and the website is a good I guess portal.
Totally. I'll plug it. It's Meat House or Haas.
Meat House.
MEATHAUS, if people want to check it out, .com. And like Brendan Graham, who I've gotten the chance to meet, his stuff is incredible.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And, he's one of the consummate cartoonists.
And he'll be actually at the comic convention on Sunday as well.
Yeah.
So it'll be, if you want to check out Meat House Talent. And I'm looking forward to hopefully one day seeing another Meat House book. From what I understand, it'll be many moons.
Finished, and we're just trying to get it printed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It is all put together. I think the thing I have in it is actually 2 years old, and it's something that you can already find on my one of my other websites called PoliteWinter.com.
Oh, speaking of Polite Winter, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. Well, the idea was initiated by a friend of mine from school. Actually, I didn't know him in school. This was actually met him through Meat House. He wanted to be in Meat House after seeing some of the issues and knowing some of the guys he emailed.
But you wouldn't let him in?
I'm sorry?
You wouldn't let him into the house?
No. After seeing his work, he was we totally needed him, I guess. But his name is Kenichi Hoshine, and he was a painter. But he also did these really strange poetic comics. But I guess our interests are mostly aligned in terms of painting. And so actually it was when I moved to LA, he called me and he had this idea to do these this collaboration where he would do a panel with some text and then I would do a panel in response with some text, and we would go back and forth and then see what happens, sort of a stream of consciousness, exquisite corpse.
And you guys are in the middle of this collaboration right now.
That's right, yes. I think we're on panel number 45, and I'm waiting for Kenichi. He's a little slow.
It's a beautiful sight, and I was puzzling over it last night, and it really is very poetic. You guys just started off with one panel, and you're just trusting each other to carry on this weird narrative as it goes?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's interesting to sort of just respond to, I guess Kenichi is more inclined towards quiet, really poetic images and words, and I like to turn things upside down sometimes, and I think some of the panels have really grossed out and offended some people, but it's interesting combination. And it does really work well together because I think we have similar sensibilities.
It also allows you an opportunity to be more experimental with what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's no constraints except for the fact that it has to be a square and
right.
has to have some kind of text on it. And I guess we hope to publish a book down the line if we ever get to 100 panels.
Right.
So.
So for yourself, it's a way of like expanding your own work.
Sure, yeah.
And in a non, like, you know, because normally the majority of your stuff is for other people.
Right.
So this is like your own way of doing your own art.
Yeah, yeah.
How long would one of those polite winter panels take for you?
Well, it really depends, because they're all so different in terms of medium and execution. I would say I'd spend probably 1 or 2 days on it. I don't think it should be something. Well, for me, it's not something I really labor over in terms of execution. But the most grueling part is actually just trying to come up with the writing, mm-hmm. and to have it mesh with the original concept.
Yeah, the words are always hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the ideas and writing, that's where the gold is, and it's difficult to mine.
I'm kind of connect here with creativity, and the creation is your book Process Recess and your website. It seems a lot of like you like to be transparent with the concept of process.
Sure, yeah.
I'm just like curious, because some artists are very like closed in and like, okay, here's my final product, this is all you're gonna see. And but it's neat because you go through and through the different steps of creating. I think it was one of the Fables covers with the two heads, the guy holding the two heads.
Yeah.
What's it for you to kind of like show that, and like what's the importance of process for you as far as like the aspect of creation?
Well, I'm sure a lot of fine art majors out there or MFA students will know that, for some artists, process is everything, and sometimes it's, mm-hmm. it's more about the process than the final product. But for me, of course, you know, the final product is really what it's all about. But, there's just something very interesting about how things are created, and you know, everyone's always curious. The act of creation is just so mysterious for me. It's always difficult to conceive of how painting will turn out from the beginning. You just can't predict it, really, and sort of let the paint and the pen dictate your path. And that also shows in my travel drawings and mm-hmm. things like that, where I just let what I'm looking at dictate what happens on the piece of paper, and sort of let my subconscious take over. But the conscious mind can really screw things up. You know, you could apply it to anything. You know, women, relationships. There's process and there's recess. So
there's a process and then there's the fun part.
Yeah. Because, process can be, quite painful, too. And I guess recess, you can take that to mean, either the fun part or either, like a deep hole in the ground that you can't get yourself mm-hmm. out of. But
part of the process, too, is choosing the tools that you're going to use, right? Whether it's oils or acrylics, or whether you're going to be working in your sketchbook. And of course, you use a lot of Photoshop.
Sure, yeah. It's just the variety of tools at one's disposal can be liberating, but also confining. The larger your vocabulary is, the larger, the more well-versed you're in materials, the more interesting your art can be, and the more enjoyable the process can be. I would hate to have a set of rules that always apply to every single mm-hmm. piece. I mean, I guess after having worked so long doing covers and illustration, there are certain things I find myself repeating. There are patterns that happen. That I always do a very tight sketch, and then from that I blow it up, and then from there on out it's a free for all. And I think usually it does end up in Photoshop, And even Photoshop, I mean, you know, the number of filters and brushes and colors you can and color combinations you can come up with are just limitless. But it really shows how important restraint and it reveals the level of your taste, I guess. So
I think that's actually quite interesting, like the concept of restraint is, because sometimes with, and I can get really bored with a lot of Photoshop art where it just seems people are like getting so into the technology that you've kind of lost the art. Oh, look, that's really technically pleasing, but it doesn't seem like there's any heart in it.
Yeah, there's nothing to hold on to, really.
I mean, at the same time, also, I'm always interested in the unexpected. So, you know, in Photoshop, there are always strange combinations of things you can do that'll always surprise you. And, you know, it really does take some restraint and a level of choosing to create something that's true to yourself. And I guess that's where the heart comes into play.
I noticed with Photoshop is one aspect that I see really predominant in your work is zip tone.
Right. Yeah, I would say that's. I guess I must have a zip tone period. I think it was maybe 2 years ago. I used a lot in those Batgirl covers and in some of my older illustrations. I've sort of moved on, but I noticed a resurgence in the use of zip tone. I think I don't know if it was because of me or if it was just the zeitgeist or whatever.
Well, it's neat though because zip tone is such like a nowadays such an antiquated art
analog
medium. Yeah, it's analog. You know, it's you're sitting down with the transparencies and the X-Acto knives and slapping it on your pages.
Sure.
But it's still like even doing it digitally, it still creates this whole other dimensional feel. I find.
Yeah,
like it kind of gives it a pop.
Right. Because the zip tone. I mean, not only. Does it recall, cutting it with the blade, and I mean, it also recalls the printing process, and so many of us are, when you see old comics, you get that nostalgic feeling, that the aged paper, and there's a warmth to it, and I guess it recalls a sense of the mechanical process, the pressure of the printing press, and all of that. And I did feel a little conflicted doing it at first. It sort of felt fake and disingenuous. It was a cheap effect, but hey, in the end, it's just illustration for print. It's not like I'm doing a gallery painting.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I reconciled that conflict, but.
It's not going to be in the Louvre.
No. Well, who knows? Never know. I mean, in L.A. they just had that Masters of American Comics show at the Hammer Museum and the Museum of Modern Art.
The comics goodness.
Yes.
When you're at the comic convention, I'm just going to remind people who are listening to her. This is James Jean we're speaking with, talking about the new book, or not new book, I guess Process Recess is a couple years old now.
Yes.
A year old, 2 years from Madhouse Books, and you're going to be at the comic convention at Main and 15th at Heritage Hall on Sunday. What kind of stuff will you have available? Because you're saying on your website you're going to have prints and original art.
Yes.
What kind of stuff can I spend my money on?
Well, I'll have a whole bunch of Giclée prints of some illustrations, some of my cover work, and I'll have I think 3 binders full of sketches and drawings, and I would say they're more affordable than my larger pieces. Actually, I'm keeping my larger stuff at home since it won't fit in my luggage, and I'm a little wary of traveling. With all those restrictions, I don't want anything to get lost.
Yeah, oh no, totally. That would be tragic.
Tragic, yes. So, but I will have lots of stuff to look at, if not to buy. Just plenty of stuff to.
Oh, I'm planning on picking up something because I'm really blown away. Your work has a kind of a 3-dimensional feel, Like, the way it looks, like, the movement in it, it just real feels like it's kind of jumping out. And it kind of reminds me of some of the earlier work of McKean and Sienkiewicz.
Oh, wow.
Before they got more dependent on computers, where it's like, it's do you know Baron Storey's stuff?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So it kind of comes to me from that same school, but only, yeah, like, it's, I don't know, it's got, like, a different kind of warmth to your work has warmth that stuff's a lot more starker.
Yeah, it's more
aggressive.
More
post-industrial.
Yeah, it's funny because when I was in school, I started doing a sketchbook, or keeping a sketchbook, I think after, well, we all had sketchbooks, but I was sort of fed up with just doing these crappy little pencil renderings and, you know, those black hardcover sketchbooks. So generic. And then, you know, I wanted to really do something personal and just to go all out. And I started that, I guess, my sophomore year, and it sort of became, you know, a really nice treasured object. And it got me, I guess, a bit of work and also some scholarships. And it's just something I just did purely for myself. And then after I had shown, after the sketchbook was judged at the Society of Illustrators, people were telling me, oh, do you know Baron Storey and all these people? And actually, I had no idea who Baron Storey was at the time. And then I actually had the opportunity to meet him in San Jose when I spoke there, I guess, last year or 2 years ago at APE, the Alternative Press Expo, mm-hmm. or during the Alternative Press Expo, they invited me to do a workshop there. And yeah, it was just really interesting to see how, you know, you do something really personal, and but then, you know, you find out that there are all these other people who share similar passions, and I guess that's how art connects to different people in general. There's just some, you know, if you're true, honest yourself, there's I think there's always something, you can always get something enjoyable and, I don't know if it's how you describe the experience of looking at art. I mean, if it's pleasure or if it's, you know, something more intellectual. But then, you know, with Sienkiewicz and Baron Storey and McKean, I think they're all open to different kinds of approaches. They're not constrained by, you know, certain medium or certain style. Look, they just want to create.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like a true meme in the way, instead of the old internet, I'm doing a meme and we're all going to draw the same thing. It's more of like this subconscious art movement. I don't know if that's the right term, but that's what I'll call it. It's workshops. Tell us about these workshops.
It actually wasn't a workshop. That's the wrong word. They wanted me to do more of a straightforward demonstration of how I worked. And at the time, I was a little uncomfortable with doing that, since I don't work so well under scrutiny. You know, especially, I think they packed in like maybe 200 people into a room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it wasn't an auditorium. It was a classroom. So it was a little difficult, and I think it was my first real speaking engagement, other than, you know, doing small classes here and there. And I just went on and on for, I think, 2 hours on art history, basically. And people were yawning and nodding off. My wife was there, and she was like elbowing me, telling me to shut up. But, you know, people want the good stuff. You know, they want to see you work in Photoshop. They want to see you paint. And
they want to know the secrets.
Exactly, yes. And I think in October I will be doing a real workshop at this place called the Entertainment Art Academy in L.A. And the way I proposed it was that I'll be drawing from the model or from a certain scene. And then people are also encouraged to work in their sketchbooks at the same time while I do a larger piece on a couple of easels in front of everyone, and they can see how I compose a picture and draw and all that.
I think I'm going to take a quick song break.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to play Yours and Mine. That's okay. That the Calexico? Did I pronounce them right?
Calexico.
Calexico. I'm not very good at saying things. And so we're speaking with James Dean. This is CITR 101.9 FM. So just stay on the line, James, and we'll just bring you back in about, 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Getting late for decision. What's that waiting about? Horses are chomping at the bit, and the gate is nearly busted down. Moment before the calm of the storm, and everyone's blood goes wild. Save yours and mine. Your restless heart growing old. Horses running off on their own now. The stables burned to the ground. The longer you wait, your decision will fade. Wind up wasting this time. Yours and mine. Yours and mine. Yours and mine.
CITR 101.9 FM. We have James Dean on the line, and we are talking about Process Recess and James Dean's cover work, artwork, and goodness. So much goodness, I have to say. We were just listening to the Calexico.
Calexico.
I am bad. I totally, like, sometimes I don't even have someone's name pronounced right when I'm interviewing them. I'm like, no, it's like this. Like, I just keep saying it wrong. And you did the cover artwork for that.
I did.
For that album. Tell us how you got hooked up with that. And, and I guess Calexico's a Calexico.
Yeah, that's right.
It is a band you're really into because you requested the song.
Well, basically, Joey Burns, the lead singer of the band, he just wrote me. He had seen my website and really liked my travel sketches and my sketchbook work, and he was hoping I could do something in a similar vein for his new album. And actually, I had only heard of the band through the public radio station here, KCRW.
Mm-hmm.
And but afterwards, he sent me all of his previous albums, and
they're a fabulous band.
Oh yeah, they're great. Yeah, they're I had a chance to see them live at the Henry Fonda Theater here, and they're fantastic live. They're really...
They just played here. I went to see them, and when I bought the record, I was startled that it was your work that was on the cover. For some reason, it had slipped by me.
Oh, wow.
I didn't recognize your work right off the bat, and the more research that I did, I came to realize that you were also responsible for the Donna's album cover, which...
That's right, and some other stuff... Shine Down. Have you heard of them?
Haven't heard of those.
I guess that they're more of a mainstream rock kind of band.
Perhaps that's
why. And I even did I did an ad for 50 Cent or 50 Cent.
One. That's awesome. G Unit.
Sorry.
He actually rejected it, and they went with photography instead.
Really?
Boo.
Yeah.
I guess you're not gangsta enough.
No, it was too much. I was too, a good, kind-hearted, I guess. It was a vase of roses and riddled with bullets.
Yeah, that's far too kind-hearted. Subtext.
It's for Valentine's Day. I think it was for his Valentine's Day massacre.
Al Capone style. Right. Oh. How did, Calexico, it's a band that you're into now, do you try and stick with stuff that you can kind of stand behind? Like, you're kind of like, oh, okay, that's okay, I'm not doing 50 Cent, my life will go on.
Well, when I, I guess that is, it's not quite a moral dilemma. Mm. Unlike getting an assignment from cigarette company, tobacco company,
right?
And I haven't been faced with that decision yet, but I do need to pay the mortgage, and of course, certain assignments I won't do. But in the end, it's really interesting to be able to handle this diversity of assignments.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the other types of commercial assignments that you've done.
Right.
For instance, I was just handed in another project that I'm working on an article from Wired magazine on crowdsourcing.
Yeah.
And it slapped me in the face that there you were again. There
yet
you did
again.
The cover for that.
I'm everywhere, I guess.
And also, you've also worked for ESPN Magazine.
Right.
Doing some really, really great work for the magazine involving baseball and the NBA playoffs last year. How did you hook up with that?
I don't know. The art directors just they call
they
me.
They just call you, I guess.
Yeah.
It just comes out of the blue.
I've never done any mailers or cold calls or even visited the offices of magazines.
Yeah.
I think I went to the New York Times once.
Yeah.
when I first started out. Actually, that's sort of one thing every illustration major graduate should do is to visit the New York Times and try and meet up with Stephen Heller or any of the op-ed art directors.
Right.
But it's been crazy. I don't know.
Are you a fan? Or are you a basketball fan?
I mean, no, that's the thing. I'm not.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I would have to say I'm not a fan of anything.
Yeah.
I think I like to stay. I don't know how to explain it. It's like
aloof.
Yeah, aloof. I guess that's a good word. So I can be a little more objective.
Mm.
Although I guess there's certain. I think that sometimes when I get too emotional about something,
yeah.
It sort of ruins the process. I like to when the emotions overwhelm the intellect.
Yeah.
That's when. You run into problems.
Right.
You keep the emotions, in the subconscious. I mean, they're always there. You can't help it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're doing something, you're like, I hate it, or you start loving it too much and becoming too precious with it.
Yeah.
Then
it's when you start making mistakes.
Screws you up either way.
Right. Well, I don't have a follow-up to that. You got anything, Robin?
I've got other questions of topics. Yeah. The talk about music. Some of the stuff you picked was jazz. I wasn't able to find the Wynton Marsalis track.
Oh, really?
I looked. I went through my internet resources and the station here and was unable to suss it out. I found all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Including the epic Moanin' Mambo by the.
Yeah, I love that song.
I didn't get a chance to listen to it yet, but I think
it's a long one.
We'll probably finish off the show with it.
Okay.
I don't know if we'll get the whole 11 minutes, but we'll get a chunk of it. So jazz, and is that something that like you bring into your work with that kind of that free form?
I guess it's about improvisation. When you're here with the piece, you gotta be open to different possibilities and to respond to the underlying structure or the problems that are laid before you. And the same applies to music or to jazz. When you're playing with a group or when it's time for a solo, that sort of thing. I also play the trumpet and a little bit of the piano, and that used to be a big passion of mine when I was younger, in high school. The art sort of really taken over everything, consumed everything. But somehow I haven't really carried over that passion of mine into the art. I guess you might assume that I would do, draw pictures of musicians or that sort of thing. But
well, that's why I was thinking. Like, I'm not saying like I'm thinking more of like the flow of jazz, like how your work has like a lot of warmth, and it just kind of pops and just just snap. It's just, you jump into it and it just sticks right out. And that's why like I kind of see like that crossover with jazz, with like certain kind of flavor, or it's just,
well, sure, yeah. I mean, there's so many I guess analogs between jazz and or music in general and visual art. You know, there's different textures, there's a rhythm to the piece, different tempos, and different colors. You know, people describe music with colors, tone poems, and all that. So when I'm approaching the piece, or a piece of illustration, I should say, I'm always concerned with different moments, and you know, there's certain quieter moments of the picture, and then there's moments of explosions, sometimes literally, and in terms of color, some parts are more subdued, and or even in just the, if you look overall on the range of my work, I guess you see just a whole spectrum of different kinds of approaches. I guess it's still coherent, maybe, but you just I try and take advantage of the whole scale, all the notes, and all the different.
One thing that happens in music, that I wanted to talk to you about is the classic duel between the East Coast and the West Coast. and the whole 50 Cent thing fits in.
Oh,
here
we're going back to the gangsters.
Yeah, we're going back to the gangster tip.
West Coast.
Now, you studied at the School of Visual Arts in New York and spent a lot of time, obviously, in the art community in New York, and now you're living in L.A.
Yeah.
Can you just talk a little bit about maybe the differences in the atmosphere, the differences in approaches that artists, say, on the West Coast would use as opposed to maybe some of the artists in New York or on the East Coast?
Sure. That's the interesting thing, is I think people on either side have a difficult time talking about themselves, but they know exactly what to say about the other guy.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like,
classic.
When I was on the East Coast, it's like, that looks just like, the Art Center or Juxtapose or Lowbrow kind of style.
Dismissive almost? Dismissive or just kind of with an opinion
or just
about
great.
It? Yeah,
it's competitive. It's competitive. And, it's interesting for me to have lived on both sides. I would say on the West Coast, it's definitely things are more decorative, and there's a lot of joy in making the piece. And then I think a lot of East Coasters would say that it's a lot of wasted breath. and they're not really being responsible with their imagery. It's just all, it is just a bunch of decoration.
Right.
But then on the other hand, being here, I find myself doing that. So, you know, when you're making art, you know, it's a lot of it's about mark making and and creating texture and layers and all that. On the East Coast, I think people are more serious. And I think right now there's more of a interest in drawing and in creating narrative pictures, sort of, you know, based on people having a comics background and bring that into illustration. That's a very hot thing right now. Like you can see a lot of illustrators who are doing work. Whereas on the West Coast, it's just really interesting because I would say it's more personal. That the work is more personal here. While a lot of it is decorative, and a lot of people do pick up on, say, you know, the Clayton brothers and a lot of the instructors at Art Center. Yeah, it is. I would say the fine art world is more receptive of illustrators in Southern California, or in California in general. Actually, even San Francisco, that is really different from LA. But in any case, yeah, on the East Coast, there's definitely an interest in print. And there's a pretty harsh division between the vaulted fine art gallery world and the illustration world.
Right.
Although it's always the lines are always blurring, so they say. They've been saying that for 10 years. But I guess they call it what is it now? Pop it's not pop art.
What, like lowbrow art?
Yeah, well, there's Mark a different Bell. Term for it. Yeah, it's sort of that lowbrow kind of thing.
What is it? Beautiful losers is one term. Ugly art is another term I've heard.
Sure, yeah. But even the people who are at the forefront of the movement, and maybe I would get called out and calling them the forerunners, but you know, people like Mark Wright and Gary Baseman.
Yeah, right. And absolutely.
They actually sort of want to divorce themselves from the rest of the lowbrow crowd because it's gotten a little crazy.
Yeah,
I think. And
well, they're doing all kinds of different things too. Now they're bringing in the vinyl figures and branching out into new territories, aren't they?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, they've definitely innovated.
Yeah.
And in those areas, or have become innovators in those areas, and just reaching all different forms of popular culture. But yeah, I would say a lot of that is West Coast. Although, and then there's also the whole fashion thing with. Custom T-shirts and sneakers,
right.
And all that, and designers and artists providing artwork and direction for those.
There seems to be a lot of that happening. A lot of crossover from maybe who knows how long ago, whether it was 10 years or 15, when maybe you would be an illustrator and you wouldn't have too much connection to other media.
Right.
Nowadays, you seem to see people breaking down all of those barriers
and exactly.
Getting into fashion. I mean, it's almost like you can't even have a website with your art on it unless you also are selling the T-shirt and the hat to go with it, right?
Yeah, yeah, and not only that, it's even if you just want to do your art, you know, you'll have people approaching you and asking you if you want to do these sort of things.
Yeah. Can you design a sneaker for me?
Yeah.
I have a couple of questions from Mike Meyer, one of my favorite local mini-comics guys in Vancouver. Does a great thing called Space Chat. He is a huge fan, and he's wondering if you can do anything for the Project Romantic, because you did something for the Project Superior.
Ah, that's right.
That beautiful tome from, also from Ad Host.
Yes.
Ad Host put on a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, they're great.
Will you be doing anything for Project Romantic?
No, I won't. Like I said,
the break from comics?
Yeah, comics is too difficult for me.
Now, you are doing a strip for the Fables book that's coming out, though.
Right.
The big, I guess, is it an oversized hardcover, or do you know the dimensions that they're doing for that?
It's just a regular-sized hardcover.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's going to be coming out in a couple months,
I think.
Do you have anything else coming out in the near future? Is it pretty much the covers and stuff, or will we see another Process Recess type of book?
I'm hoping to do another Process Recess book. Actually, I've been trying to talk to DC about doing a cover collection for the longest time. Actually, having buying the licensing, or having DC license the art to me.
Right.
And then Ad House and I were going to put together a collection. And unhappily, that they finally said no
finally
last week.
Yeah.
And
I can't believe they would
call
no.
them back and ask why.
Mm-hmm. They'd probably want to do it themselves. Or
well,
have the option to eventually do it themselves.
That's the difficult thing. It's that they did offer me a Fables cover collection, but that would discount all
the
other covers
and the Green Arrows.
Yeah, exactly. And they said they could pay me for it, but then, you know, of course that would also mean they would have a hand in the editorial content,
right,
or the direction. And I feel like it is a different time. Their reasoning is that, well, you know, there have been all these other artists, you know, Dave McKean, Kent Williams, Adam Hughes, Brian Boland, who've done covers, and they haven't had their books. But my feeling is it's a different time.
Mm-hmm.
The audience is different. Or the people who are looking at my artwork, you know, come from all sorts of different areas.
Yeah.
And I feel like this is just something I want to make. It's an object I want to make.
Yeah,
and I'm being stymied. And it's a little frustrating.
Is that something?
Maybe a little is an understatement.
Is that something that's going to come in play in the future as maybe part of your agreements for covers is to have?
Well, it's all going to be work for hire.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they can do whatever they want with it. They can make a book without having me involved. But my relationship with DC is still, you know, it's very close, and they've treated me well. We'll see
yeah,
where it goes.
That's right.
Well, we look forward to more of your work. Like I said, we're all big fans here, and
oh, cool.
We're pretty happy that you're coming up for our con. And
absolutely,
I think it's going to be a neat selection of people. Like, you're going to be there, as well as like another end of the spectrum. Mark Bell's going to be there.
Yeah.
And Brandon Graham, and then, you know, a plethora of a lot of my local friends who put out some great stuff. So I think you're going to have some time to wander around and check out some local great comics.
Good.
So thanks for coming on. Do you have any last questions, Sean?
No, I don't. Thanks, James.
Okay.
And
problem.
We will see you on Sunday.
Excellent.
Okay, thanks.
Look forward to it.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was James Jean, incredible painter, artist. Process Recess is a book. It's awesome. I think it's a great book, and I really recommend people checking it out. He also has a piece in Project Spear, and like we said, he does the covers for Fables. And actually, something I meant to ask is the process putting together the trade paperbacks. How much hand does he have in the design process? Because I know Dave McKean designed the Sandman books, but it sounds to me like it's pretty much work for hire.
Yeah.
So I don't think he really did much design. He did the cover, and then they go crazy from there.
We should give these people all of the website.
The websites, yes. www.jamesjean.com. That will lead you to everything. Also, check out Meet House. House. www.meethaus.com. Great stuff. Meet House Collective. It's great. And like, go to the con on Sunday. Brendan Graham, James Jean, both great. Steve Rolson's going to be there. Steve does The Escapist, and actually the latest issue of The Escapist has a James Jean cover.
Yeah, Steve's great.
Steve's awesome guy. We had him on a while ago. He's great. Mark Bell, who I want to have on one day. I'm a huge fan of his stuff.
Yeah.
I think his stuff's great. David Lasky's going to be there. Wow, I didn't know David Lasky was coming.
Camilla Derrico is going to be there.
Yeah, I know you're a fan of her work. Right. Robin Thompson, who's going to be on the show next week, will be there. Robin Bougie, my good friend, will be there. Fred Grissom, he will be there.
Right.
As well as Sean Esty, who does the online strip Marooned, is going to be releasing his first comic, real comic, and it's going to be awesome. He just got super cred. He's going to be part of Warren Ellis' online thing.
Really?
Where he's got like web comics that he's, you know, saying this is good, and so Sean Esty is one of those people of like seven Great. People, and I'm sure he got like hundreds and hundreds of submissions. And Sean Esty is really, really freaking good. You can see his stuff online at I think it's I don't know. Go to Crown Commission or inkstuds.livejournal.com, and I'm sure somewhere I have a link to his stuff. Also, don't forget about our podcasts at www.crowncommission.com. And I think soon, CITR will have podcasting. So the world is expanding for the Ink Studs. We'll be everywhere. Don King will be at the con. Don King, you know, occasional co-host here, comes and helps with interview. He was last week. He'll be on another couple of weeks, I think. Oh, no, he'll be on next week with Robin Thompson.
Very nice.
Very nice. Next, the week after that, is we'll be doing Alex Robinson, who's creator of Box Office Poison and Tricked.
Oh, that's great.
From Top Shelf. Big books. I read Tricked on the weekend.
Yeah. Doorstops.
Doorstops. A good doorstop.
That's right.
Radar Friends will be there. It's good stuff. Up next is Rhymes and Reasons. Oh, sorry. Crimes and Treasons.
Nicely done.
West Coast, y'all. The gangsta just doesn't stop. We're going to end off here with...
Charlie Mingus?
Charlie Mingus Band, live in time. Moaning Mambo from Mr. Gene. Thank you, sir. We'll be right back.
Listen, radio is an important